welcome to Books on the Go, a podcast where we talk about our book of the week. I'm Anna Bailey-Karras and I'm here with Annie Waters. Hi, Annie.
Hello.
And our special guest, Sean Mooney. Hello, Sean.
Hello, Anna and Annie.
Hi.
And Sean is joining us all the way from Tokyo. So the miracles of technology today. And this week we've been reading Flames by Robbie Arnott. But first, well, let's talk about you, Sean. Let's introduce you and then we'll do our book news. So Sean and I met through, I think, BookTube. Yeah, Litzy, wasn't it? And Sean has a BookTube channel called Sean the Book Maniac, which is wonderful. And I love it, Sean, because you read such a wide range of books and you're always very honest with your reviews, which Annie and I appreciate, honest reviews. But tell us a
honest
bit about...
Honest is a nice way of putting it.
Yeah. what sort of books you read, and we're always interested in your theory on bailing as well.
So interesting to hear you describe my reading as that I read a wide variety, because in fact I am pretty much a one genre guy. I love literary fiction and I'm not interested in any other genre. I do enjoy some nonfiction, but mostly literary fiction only. I don't like mysteries, I don't like thrillers, I don't like any other kind of fiction except literary. Within that, however, yes, I read extremely widely, from Welsh literature to classics to Indian, African, everything.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I read widely within literary fiction.
And you often, I notice, you don't just pick up the book everyone else is reading. You'll sometimes go back to, I guess, as you say, the classics, but really rediscover books or books that are more obscure as well.
Yes, I'm a bit of a nonconformist that way. If everybody's reading the book, I tend to shy away from it unless I'm kind of first out of the gate.
Yeah.
But otherwise, if there's too many people talking about the same prize list books, I kind of shy away from joining that conversation, because usually I end up hating the book that everybody else loves. Lose all my friends.
I can't imagine that.
Yeah. I'm fully in your camp there, Sean. If a book's getting too much hype, I'm a bookseller, so I think I can sell it, or it's selling itself without having to have read it, and then maybe a year or two later I'll come back to it.
I'm exactly the same way.
Yeah, fair enough. And is there anything you're reading or recommending at the moment this week?
Yes, and you guys have already raved about it. I haven't listened to the entire episode because I am now 40 pages in and completely gobsmacked by Ghost Wall.
Oh, wonderful.
Oh, my God, I love it so much.
Oh, good.
Oh, good.
Now, I've been 40 pages into many books and been enthusiastic and then bailed, so yes. I want to hold my praise, but yeah, it's really captured my imagination.
Well, at least
I absolutely love them.
It's only short.
So
it's not much room for things to go wrong from here if you're 40 pages in.
I'm hoping not, but no, I'm really loving that, and that's the one that I would rave about currently.
Yeah.
And in terms of bailing, yes, I used to call myself the queen of bailing, but I have now ascended to empress status.
Yeah.
I think so far this year I have bailed on, I keep track of these things, 22 books I have bailed on so far in 2019.
Wow.
So,
do you have a rule of thumb as to what point you have to get to in order to consider it a bail?
No, I don't. But I usually try to give around 20% before deciding. But if there's something really obnoxious, I will bail, at the drop of a hat. But if things are going along not bad, I will give it at least 20% and often 50%. But boy, I really begrudge the 50% of my valuable reading time that I've given. So earlier bails are better. But
yeah.
Sometimes there's like a one sentence that's so awful that I will bail because of that one sentence.
Yeah, fair enough.
And that's all it takes.
Well, that could have been edited out. That's there.
Life's too short.
And I put
my editor hat on too.
There's one fairly famous writer that's kind of a Canadian writer that had such one awful sentence in one of his novels, and I'm punishing him by never picking up another one of his books.
Oh, can we name names, or is that... You don't
I would take a guess at Ondaatje.
You got it.
Oh.
Yeah.
How did you know? You want to hear the sentence?
Just a hunch.
Just a hunch? That's awesome. Yeah. Do you want to hear I can quote you the sentence. I can pull it up on my Goodreads.
Yes,
it's
please.
A doozy.
Poor Michael.
I can't wait.
It's from Divisadero. All over the world, there must be people like us, Anna had said then. Wounded in some way by falling in love. Seemingly the most natural of acts.
That's it. Oh, he's better than that, isn't he?
Well, not that time, so no, never catching him again.
Oh, no. And, Sean, I've got a question. What do you do about, if you do rate on Goodreads books that you've bailed on, do you just give, because sometimes I bail on a book that I know is a very strong book, but it just wasn't for me. But how do you rate? Do you still just say, look, it's only a 1 or 2 star because I didn't like it?
I rarely give a star rating to books that I bail on. I think it's not fair.
No,
I'm entitled to express my opinion on why I bailed, but I don't think I'm entitled to give a star rating. However, if I've read at least 50% and I feel very strongly about it, I will sometimes give a star rating.
Yeah, fair enough.
It sounds like that star rating is not positive, though.
It's not positive. Otherwise, I just give my opinion and move on.
Yeah, fair enough.
Somebody recently who counts their bails as part of their books read in a year, which I
no.
I have a separate list for my bails.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, I love how you keep track of it too.
Now, I want to share, can I share one quote? This is my philosophy of reading, and this comes from Doris Lessing.
Yes.
There is only one way to read, which is to browse in libraries and bookshops, picking up books that attract you, reading only those, dropping them whenever they bore you, skipping the parts that drag, and never, never reading anything. Because you feel you ought.
Oh, yes.
Well, I want that on a T-shirt.
That's a great quote. That's my philosophy too. Yes, I'm just going to take that from Doris Lessing and get the T-shirt.
Yes.
Definitely.
Let's make the T-shirt. You should make a Books on the Go T-shirt with that on.
We should. Well, we did have this come up recently with Lost Children Archive, but let's not revisit that now.
I'm going to be trying that myself next month, so we'll see how that goes.
It's actually had a bit of love on BookTube, I've seen recently, with Sophie. Eric and Anna both loved it, and Sophie at Portal in the Pages also.
Mm-hmm.
So, it's dividing opinions, but that's like, I'm comfortable with my decision on that one. Now, we do always have a little bit of book news, and we've been in a flurry of awards, but this week there's a lull just ahead of by the time this goes live, the Women's Prize shortlist will have been announced, but we don't know that yet. And so why don't we have Annie the top 10 bestsellers for this week in Australia?
Sure. Well, I'm going to skip over the three titles that are the Easter, sorry, four titles that are the Easter hunt. So this is the top 14, but not including the Easter egg hunt and Peppa Pig's Easter egg hunt.
No.
At the top of the list is the new book from Jeff Kinney, rather, in the
Wimpy Kid
series about the Wimpy Kid diaries. So this is a spin-off diary, which is Rowley Jefferson's journal. So this series is called Diary of an Awesome Friendly Kid, and that jump straight to the top, as most of the Wimpy Kid titles do. Then coming in at number three, we've got Redemption, which is the new one by David Baldacci, so a crime thriller. We've got E.L. James's The Mister coming in at number four, only released this week, and it's getting some awful reviews, but I don't think that'll stop anyone from reading it.
Still at number four. It will stop me, Annie, I can tell.
Well, yes, obviously. I mean, I didn't dip into any of the shades of grey, so I think I would be able to refrain from reading this one too.
We did the first one for my book club, and so I bailed on that at the 50-page mark.
I heard a lot about it, and thankfully So then we've got Matthew Riley's latest book, which is kind of a YA crossover called The Secret Runners of New York. That's doing quite well at number six. Weirdo number 12, which is Doe's latest book in the Weirdo series, Hopping Weird, at number seven. Barefoot Investor, still up there in the top 10.
You're
at number
kidding.
Eight.
Wow.
No. Then 9 and 10 are Easter titles. Number 11 is Boy Swallows Universe, which came out in the B format recently. Sean, I'd be interested to know if you've read that, actually.
No, but it's on my list. I've heard glowing reviews.
Yeah, although if you're not a huge magical realism person, I wonder whether that will put you off slightly. But yeah, we really did enjoy that.
Yes, I've been told I should definitely do it on audio. The audio was apparently wonderful.
Oh, that's good to know.
I wonder who reads it. I don't know.
Yeah.
I don't know the name, but apparently it's a lovely Australian accent. Almost as lovely as your lady's.
Right. Neither of us got the gig, as far as I know. So then number 12 is Eleanor Oliphant is Completely Fine.
Wow.
We have David Walliams' Thing in at number 13 and Tattooist of Auschwitz at number 14. Stills. So some holiday reading there for lots of people, wow. I think.
So not any enormous changes, really.
No, I think the David Baddutch is probably the only
new
one of the only new entries into that top 10, and the Matthew Raleigh's been out for a couple of weeks. So, all some pretty obvious choices, but, you know,
overtaken by the Easter Bunny.
Well, yes, truly, it has visited.
Well, on to our book of the week, and we've been reading Flames by Robbie Arnott. And Robbie Arnott's an Australian author. He lives in Tasmania, and he's still working full-time. This is his first novel, and he works as an advertising copywriter, which I think some really good novelists have had that as their past job. They, like Peter Carey, I think, was an advertising copywriter in another life.
And didn't Jane Harper work in advertising for a little while?
She might have, yes. I know she's definitely worked as a journalist for a long time. But he has had some stories published by the Lifted Brow, and we talked about Lifted Brow the other week, who have brow books now as well, and in Kill Your Darlings, and that's the journal co-founded by Hannah Kent of Burial Rights, and in Seven Stories, I think. And he won the 2015 Tasmanian Young Writers Fellowship. So this is his first book, Flames. It's set in Tasmania, and interestingly, he never uses the word Tasmania, but not in that annoying way of, you know, I'm pretending it's not anywhere and I'm just not naming it, but it just happens that it isn't named, but it's very clearly Tasmania, and he doesn't.
Well, he names places.
Yeah, he names all the places there, and he certainly says that that's where it's set, but I just found that interesting. And the characters and the setting are sort of equally important in this book. It's not the usual hierarchy where the humans are sort of the, you know, at the top and then the landscape sits as the background. I think nature and wildlife are very much part of the story. So Tasmania really is part of it. It's the story of Levi and Charlotte, who are brother and sister, and Levi decides to build a coffin for Charlotte for reasons, and so she runs for her life. So that's the premise, and it does have that sense of humour from the first page, because what happens is in their mother's side of the family, the women, when they die, they come back to life and then they burn, they go up in flames, and so Levi doesn't want Charlotte to have to go through that, so he decides it'll be better for her to be buried in the ground, and she just runs away, as you might do, because she's only 23. But it does have that sense of the author is having fun with it, as much as that sounds quite weird and also tragic. And so Levi gets a detective to find her, and so then we meet the detective, and Charlotte goes on this journey to run away as far as she can, and so she meets various characters along the way, including a water rat, a fisherman, a farmer who has a wombat farm down at a very southern point of Tasmania. Around the story, we are also learning about Levi and Charlotte's parents and the story about their family, really, and also this sort of odd, unlikely love between their parents, which we find out more about sort of towards the end. It has been shortlisted for the Victorian Premier's Literary Award and the New South Wales Premier's Literary Award, which is being announced on the 29th, so we'll know that by the time this goes live. The Indie Book Awards for debut fiction and the Readings Prize for New Australian Fiction. It has been described by Richard Flanagan as a strange and joyous marvel. and his book, Gould's Book of Fish, was one of the inspirations for the novel, and he's a hero of Robbie Arnott. And I heard Robbie Arnott being interviewed, and he said when he heard, when he had the phone call from his agent to, or his publisher to say Richard Flanagan's going to blurb the book, he was quite overcome. So it was a really lovely story. It moves between genres. So there's a detective who, that section is told in a, almost a Raymond Chandler style hard-boiled crime, and there's a gothic scene. There's, and so in that way, there's a, it's also takes inspiration from books like A Visit from the Goon Squad by Jennifer Egan, where it, and that does it more overtly, where each chapter is very distinctly, you know, told in a different style. But yes, what did you think, Annie?
I liked it well enough. I didn't love it. I think it's a first novel and has some of the problems that many first novels do, in that the plot comes together in a manner that is all too pat for my liking. I loved when he just sat back and wrote about landscape and Tasmania that he clearly has such a love for. I really enjoyed those sections. I think some of the sections where he experiments a bit more with genre and form were a bit grating. So there's a character called Thurston Hough, who's a kind of curmudgeonly old bloke who fancies himself a poet and has kind of squirreled himself away and doesn't want anyone to contact him. And he and Levi exchange letters about the building of this coffin. He's, yes, he's a writer and has written this book about building coffins, as you do. but he's incensed that Levi has contacted him via the post and sends back some very almost kind of Wodehouseian letters that just didn't quite fall for me. And then there's another diary entry section that, I don't know, it all just felt a bit hackneyed and contrived. But, yeah, the storyline between Charlotte, the sister of Levi, and her kind of journey to, I guess, self-discovery or out of her grief, really. They're both grieving the loss of their mother, which has happened quite recently, and then she's come back to life and then died again in flames. I felt for those characters, but some of the more peripheral characters I just didn't care about. But, yeah, I think the landscape really shone through. I think, having been to Tasmania and having a deep love for Tasmania, you see all of its different complexities and contradictions, all the different types of landscape and the elements that make it up. So I quite liked that each chapter has a different element kind of as the title. So there's coal and sky, and flames, I guess, is one of them.
Salt,
that's that one. Yeah, and it's beautifully done when he just sits back and writes prose, but, yeah, a bit fiddly in other sections was my general review.
Yeah, and Sean, tell us, did you make it?
I didn't make it. It was too strange for me. It started out really good. I was hooked by the first couple chapters.
Yeah.
In particular, the chapter about the fishing, the tuna fishing with the seal.
Yes, I loved that too.
That was incredible, and I was just riveted. And it got, it was weird in that first chapter about the mother coming back as kind of a green Sasquatch or whatever for a few days. But it really hooked me. And then that chapter about the seal and that was just riveting. But then I got to the chapter about the Esk god.
Yes.
And if I was reading it correctly, that was, he was, we met him when Charlotte met him in the chapter before, right?
Yes.
Mm. And he's a god in the river.
He's a water rat.
He's a water rat.
He's a rat. Yeah. Oh,
yes.
Not so a god?
The Esk is the river.
But is he a god? I think he
fancies himself the god. And I think he is the god from later in the book. But I think he definitely has an overinflated sense of self.
I couldn't deal with that at all. And I bailed halfway through. No. So, and I think I'm glad that I did, hearing the way you're describing it. It sounds like a book. And I knew already that it's a book that appeals to many readers. But I'm a bit of a genre policer, and I don't like a lot of genre-related
hopping
dipsy doodles in my fiction, though. So,
I think the tonal, the tonal shifts are a bit disconcerting sometimes.
Yeah, I think some of them work. Yes, for me, I actually loved it, but some parts worked better than others for sure. And what was interesting is at first I didn't notice the genre switching, and I felt as if, and I think that in a good way, that it was very smooth, and it was more that he was just bringing the characters to life with their voice, and so the style might change a bit to suit that character in the same way that as you move through life, everyone speaks with a different style and has a different way of speaking. So it was smooth in that sense. But yes, the Thurston Hoff Coffinmaker's letters with Levi, I found a little bit over the top, which jarred just because the rest of the book, it felt a bit exaggerated.
But not enough to be funny, I thought. Like, I think that section was meant to be quite funny and quite tongue-in-cheek.
Yes.
But I didn't laugh.
No, I know what you mean.
Have either of you read American Gods by Neil Gaiman?
No.
Because I think this is what it felt like. He was trying to make a Tasmanian version of American Gods, which is one of my favourite books.
Oh, right. Okay.
Gaiman imagines the kind of gods of landscape in America butting up the new gods of petrol and capitalism and or money, things like that. It felt like a bit of the juxtaposition between the old and the new in Tasmania and the kind of shifting nature of that very natural landscape being more and more populated by white people.
Yeah, well, he certainly, I think, reads very widely, so it's quite possible he's read and been influenced by that one as well, which I hadn't picked up on that. I know there are a few other influences that people have mentioned, but no, I actually, not all of the genres worked for me, but what I loved overall was the sense that he was having fun. Mm. I love the fact that he has just had fun with this and obviously let himself go and tried lots of different things, and I think on the whole for me successfully, but unevenly, shall we say. But what I loved, and I know exactly what you mean, Sean, about the esque god, because I'm not into animals as gods or even talking characters. I don't at all. And yet I felt as if Robbie Arnott was in that chapter, because that chapter felt quite a smooth transition for me, and I felt as if he was saying, well, it's all very well to look at this from the human's point of view, as we always do, because we're all very self-centred, but why don't we look at this landscape from the point of view of the animals, or the water rat in this case? What does he think of all this? And then he switches it up again to another character, and I just felt as if he was giving a very much a 360-degree view of the story instead of centering it always on the humans as the, what do you call it, the top of the pyramid or whatever the
Sean, whether part of your disconnect with the story was that, I don't know if you've ever been to Australia or in particular Tasmania, but I could see as an outsider or someone who hadn't lived in that community, it might be a bit disorienting, because I think there are lots of references that are not quite in jokes, but, you know, if you knew that landscape, you could orient yourself a bit more perhaps with the strangeness.
Well, I haven't been to Australia, but I do, that part didn't put me off at all. I was found myself going to Google to check out this town name or this whatever, and that I enjoyed that kind of aspect of discovering a new setting in the fiction. But have either of you read Freshwater by Akweke Emeze? It's on
Women's
Prize long list. It was one of my top reads last year, and it is narrated exclusively by African Igbo deities. And I absolutely love that book.
Yeah,
so
right.
Some books just
it can work.
Right, and it can work.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
Well, likewise, I have enjoyed other books that have some sort of fantastical elements. So it's interesting. Sometimes I think, for me, if the writing's strong enough or if I'm very much into the story, I can happily go along with it. But this one, I just felt as if the characters, it was just part of a wider view of looking at things, and it was all interconnected. I felt as if he was showing us how everything is, you know, humans connect with and influence the environment and vice versa. And then the minor characters like Oshikawa, the fish trader, sort of come back into it later. So nothing is irrelevant. It's all drawn together. And I just loved the prose. I thought it was very poetic at times, very vivid. And the tuna fishing, likewise, I just felt as if and I'm not into fishing, I'm not into, you know, tuna, whatever, seals, but I felt as if I was there, and he really brought that to life so well.
And that was almost, that scene was almost more of a connection between human and animal and the ways in which we can work together with the landscape to achieve a common purpose.
Yes.
Yeah, I thought that one was a standout chapter.
Yeah, and I think for me...
I wanted to read a whole book. I wanted to read a whole novel about that.
Yes, you wanted Carl.
Yeah,
and that was interesting because for me, one of the strengths of it was that, and this is why I could handle the Esk God, because he doesn't overdo it. And I couldn't have maybe done a whole book about the water rat, for example. Well, I know I couldn't, but he just gives you enough and then he moves on. And so the pace was always kept you turning the pages. And it was interesting because we did this also as a buddy read with some other friends from BookTube, Joe Smith and Valentina Garcia. And one of, I think Joe said she actually wanted more when she finished the book. She felt she wanted more of some of the characters. So that's an interesting thing that you say, Sean, that he had this wonderful chapter about Carl and then you do meet Carl again. But really, you know, you felt as if you could have had more of that, for example.
Exactly.
So he, but I actually liked that he kept it short because I think any one of those chapters, you know, as a whole novel may not have worked, but woven together for me, it was just gorgeous. And yeah, I thought the dialogue rings, you know, was really true and again, minimal. There was more description than or action than dialogue. Yeah, I loved the strong women characters as well. So Charlotte,
the women were good.
Her mother Nicola. Edith and Nicola. Yeah. And the humour. So I did feel as if he was having fun with it and giving you a sense that he was bringing you into the story. So even on that first page where the mother goes up in flames and he says, this sort of thing wasn't unusual in our family. And you just, you feel as if something weird's going on, but the author's saying, it's okay, just go with me. It's, you know, it'll be all right.
I'm so glad you enjoyed it, Anna. And most readers agree with you. This has a really high rating on Goodreads, 4.3.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, I wonder if it's got quite a local following. It was a very Tasmanian book, obviously, and I think he got a fair bit of attention in Melbourne, so it might be a bit of an Australian literary scene kind of book as well.
Could be. Yeah. Simon Savage trumpeted it early. That's where I first heard about it.
I think that's where I heard about it too. Yeah, he really loved it. But he can handle a bit more folklore and fantastical elements probably than I can even. But
yeah, that's what I was going to say, that one of the things that I really like about magical realism, especially I love Japanese fiction, and a lot of times they're kind of gently magically realist. And I quite like that things happen that are not usual, but the characters often just take it in their stride and kind of just move through as if that is the way that the world works, and they very much take it on. No one wastes time being like, oh my gosh, what's happening here? This is unusual. that they just all kind of take it in their stride, and I quite like that.
So you must be at least partially talking about Haruki Murakami.
Yes, yeah, absolutely. Yeah, but also people like Banana Yoshimoto. Yeah, I think there's a tradition there.
Yeah.
I only have one more profound point to make on this novel, which is that I was disappointed that I didn't finish it and that I didn't love it because Robbie Arnott is kind of cute.
Yeah.
He's very cute. It's true. And I don't know if I've told you this story, but I heard about this first before it was published at a conference. He and Catherine Collett, who wrote The Helpline, had to pitch their books in a kind of Gruen transfer style advertising pitch. And they were both very funny and very forthright, very good speakers.
That would have been brilliant.
Catherine Collett won. So, that's where my sympathies lie. Yeah.
Oh, that would have been so much fun. He does seem to be just a very nice guy and with a good sense of humour. And for me, that came through in the book, and that's why I warmed to it, even though there were parts that, if they were a standalone novel, like the letters, for example, I would have been more, not disliked it, but hesitant. I wouldn't have been as...
I think it wasn't at all pretentious, which...
Yeah, and it wasn't cynical.
Yeah, he was definitely trying things out, and some of them worked and some of them didn't. Yeah, I liked that approach. So I agree with you. It's a fun book. It's easy reading, you know, it's quick.
Yeah, it's very not a slog read. To read. Yeah. Oh, very good. Well, Sean, thank you very, very much for reading along with us and your honest review, as always. And
thank you for reading the first three chapters.
Yeah. We'll definitely have to do this again. I'll have a think about that, which book we might all enjoy. And so that was Flames by Robbie Arnott. And next week, Amanda and I will be reading The Van Apfel Girls by Felicity McLean. And then Annie will be back with The Erratics by Vicky Laveau Harvey, the Stella Prize winner.
Yes,
and
wonderful.
Sean, what are you reading next?
I'm starting 7 new books on May 1st, but I'll just tell you about one of them.
Oh, my gosh.
Yeah, I like to read everything during the month, and then on the first of the month start a whole swack of new books. I love that feeling. It's like Christmas morning feeling at the beginning of every month. So one of the ones I'm really looking forward to is a novel from Angola called Transparent City by Ondjaki. That's Ondjaki.
Right.
It just goes by that one name. Uh-huh. It's translated from the Portuguese, and the translation was just published last year, and I've heard really good things about it.
Oh, right. How interesting. Well, I'll look forward to seeing how that goes, Sean, with your 7 books. I love that idea of the first of the month, Christmas morning.
That's right.
Yeah, very good.
And see how many I've bailed on by week 2.
6.5.
And so that's it from us. And in the meantime, you can follow us on Facebook at Books on the Go and email us, booksonthegopodcast@gmail.com. And I'm on Litzy, Instagram and Twitter at A. Bailey Karras. And Annie?
I'm on Litzy, Instagram and Twitter at Mr_Annie.
Excellent. And Sean, how can we find you?
I'm on YouTube at Sean the Book Maniac, and on Instagram, Sean Mooney, and Twitter, Sean Mooney, Litzy Sean Mooney.
Oh, that's good. Thank you very much again for joining us, Sean.
Thank you.
My pleasure.
We'll see you next week. Bye for now.